Hello and welcome to the check-in for community, connection, and conversation over the airwaves. Thank you for checking in today. I'm Janet Saidi. If you know just a little bit about journalism, you've heard the word objective thrown around a lot. Journalists are expected to show up, witness, observe, and then go back and report the truth and nothing but. But while the facts are king in our world, the mandate for being fair and objective often, as anyone who's worked in a newsroom has seen, makes us very cautious. Do our goals of objectivity, a thing which might not even exist, prevent us from telling it like it is? We've all been covering a pandemic where mixed messages from government officials make it difficult to navigate. Now we're in a movement calling for an end to police violence, racism, and for social justice. Is it okay for journalists to be for some things and clearly against other things? Well, today we're going to unpack all of this. We're speaking with two seasoned editors and professors here at the Missouri School of Journalism about how to cover the current movement in a pandemic, protests, police, and race right now. Ernest Perry is Associate Dean for Graduate Studies, as well as a professor at the School of Journalism. He's researched African-American press history. He's worked as an editor at the Columbia Missourian and worked as a reporter in Texas, Illinois, and Connecticut. Ernest Perry, welcome to the check-in.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you here. We also are joined by Columbia Missourian Executive Editor Ruby Bailey. Professor Bailey joined the paper in 2018 as the first woman to hold the top editor position in the paper's 100-plus year-long history. She got her start at a small publication in Flint, Michigan, while at the Detroit Free Press. Later, Professor Bailey spent time as a Washington correspondent. She's also covered 9/11 and spent several months embedded with Navy forces in Iraq. Thank you for joining us, Ruby Bailey.
Thank you so much for having me. It is wonderful to be here.
Thanks, Ruby. And you also, listeners, can join us. Please call us with your questions, your comments. These shows go by super quick. We've got a lot to unpack today, but your questions, your comments are always our priority. We're talking about the job of journalists today in a pandemic and in a protest and social movement. What are you seeing and hearing? Would you like to see journalists more often just calling it like it is? Where are you getting your information during this time? And before we even dig into this larger discussion on journalism and objectivity, let's bring in two reporters who have covered the police and justice beat for years. And these two are reporters that I've been watching and reading and just wanting to kind of get a perspective from behind the scenes. First, we have Glenn Rice joining us from Kansas City. Glenn is a breaking news reporter for the Kansas City Star who covered crime and courts. He's joining us from Kansas City. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, Janet. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm good. Thanks for being here with us from Kansas City. We also have Pat Pratt, who many of you have probably read. He's with the Columbia Tribune, covering the criminal justice beat there. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Janet. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. So let me jump in with some questions for Pat and Glenn. First, on just covering policing right now. Let me just start with one of my impossible general questions that I tend to start people off with, which is, you've both been covering these issues for years. How is this time different? Glenn, do you want to start?
What's different this time around is that you saw the public death of a man at the hands of police. There's no ambiguity or vagueness. We don't have to incorporate any alleged because we know that the police officer caused George Floyd's death. And so what happened is the culmination of decades and decades of mistrust, frustration with law enforcement in various sectors of throughout the entire nation. And so you saw a resurgence, and not just African-Americans, but also others as well. Those individuals who are white, Latino, other races joined in this, and what they saw was a systemic epidemic that has captured poor and colors of community for decades, if not centuries. So you saw that bubble up. You saw that play out in various fashions, various platforms, whether it be protest or any other form of what was important to those who wanted their voices heard.
All right, Glenn Rice, thank you. You just started us off there by telling us exactly what it is right now with, like you said, no ambiguity, no vagueness in what was happening with George Floyd. Pat, what are you finding this time that's different?
Well, I agree with everything Glenn said. And what's been on my mind foremost during much of this is an issue that's lingered in Missouri for years, and that is a serious lack of transparency by our law enforcement agencies. I think a combination of weak laws at the state level, aka the Sunshine Law, and an unwillingness by police, law enforcement agencies to have discussions on what is happening in the streets, what arrests are taking place, is preventing many of us in this profession from actually doing our jobs. And I think that's a great detriment to the public. And okay. I'd like to share an example. So several days ago, I believe it was June 2nd or June 3rd, we had a young man arrested for civil disobedience here in Columbia. Mm-hmm. I reached out to the Columbia Police Public Information Department for information. I said, you know, hey, this guy was arrested for civil disobedience. What can you provide us as the basis for the arrest? And their response is essentially a reframing of my question. They're like, you know, he was arrested for civil disobedience. I file a Sunshine request for the incident report. It takes 7 days to get the incident report. The incident report itself says exactly the same thing. Basically, we responded to a crime. You know, I would argue that's not transparency. It's not allowing us to tell the story of what's happening during these events. And I think there needs to be some significant change to Missouri open record laws.
All right. Let me just remind people you're listening to The Check-In, and we're speaking with right now with Glenn Rice from the Kansas City Star and Pat Pratt with the Columbia Tribune. Both cover the police beat in Kansas City and Columbia, respectively. We're also speaking during this program with Associate Dean Ernest Perry and Columbia, Missourian Executive Editor Ruby Bailey about reporting and coverage during this time. Pat, you and Glenn have both just started us off with some really key words here. Pat, you're talking about the difficulty getting information, having to put in requests, the lack of transparency. You also used a word reframing. And a lot of what journalists are having to do is get to the heart of what's happening with sometimes obfuscation and police reports themselves that are actually not necessarily reliable accounts of what's happened on a scene. We also have had statements from law enforcement here in Columbia. Pat, what do you see as a disconnect between what our law enforcement agency is releasing and our city is releasing as statements and what you're able to get in police reports and how to get at the truth behind those things?
Well, I think there's a disconnect between the department. And, you know, I got to point out, it's a strange structure to me, the way communications are handled in regards to the Columbia Police Department. We have a public information office that is actually a branch of city government and is, you know, it's not technically embedded in the police department. So to pose a question to the police department, you know, you have to go through the public information office. And I don't really know what information they are being provided by the administrators at CPD. But, you know, the answers I get are, again, you can tell they're obviously vague, they're sanitized, and in truth, it looks like an attorney wrote them.
Okay.
So I think what we're seeing here is that attorneys on behalf of cities have taken far too great of a role in creating policies regarding the release of information, and they're doing so out of a fear of litigation before litigation has ever been filed or even announced. And it's sort of a proactive measure that's kind of stepping on our First Amendment right, and I really think something needs to change there.
And boy, do you see that, you know, as every journalist on the line here can relate to that. And you see this in so many things. It's really, really crucial right now with police information. But you also see this with healthcare information when someone is damaged or even dies in a hospital. A lot of times it's hard to get information because of liability. So we see a lot of liability, a lot of caution, bringing a lack of transparency, which is not always helpful. Glenn, what do you see as far as the official information that you get from the police and how you sort through that to report a story?
Well, I'd like to echo some of the comments that were already been made. from Pat. It's very frustrating. Maybe that's too nice of a word. But what generally happens is that you have to email public information officers questions. Occasionally, you may be able to call one of them on the phone, and they will get back with you. There was a time many, many decades ago, I believe when I started, George H.W. Bush was president, maybe doing Reagan. But anyway, you could actually walk down to the police department, walk through the front doors, walk up to the third floor where the violent crimes unit was, and talk to a sergeant. Who was a supervisor, sort of, to talk with them about what was going on. You develop personal relationships. Sometimes they will tell you things that maybe they wouldn't tell anybody else. You would go to crime scenes and talk to sergeants, talk to detectives. They got to know you. You had face-to-face contact with them. That is no longer the case. You're able to assess your level of coverage simply by what they would tell you. Obviously, you still would have to get out into the community, knock on doors, balance what police tell you with what eyewitnesses tell you. There are plenty of times where we have to balance what police tell us based on what we hear on the street and go back in and challenge them on that notion that they provided. The key word now is accountability, and now we find ourselves having to research lawsuits that individuals have filed against police departments and monies that have been paid out. A lot of these things are done in secrecy. Echoing the earlier comments, that it does look like an attorney has written some of the press messages to the media. We have one homicide sergeant, but also two, sometimes homicide sergeants will not relay information to the media spokespeople. There's a sergeant here that would barely tell PIOs that a person has been killed or shot or been stabbed, that they actually have a homicide victim where the body is right there. Well, we think that person's dead, okay? Then why are you here if they're not? So, yeah, it's very frustrating.
Right. I hear your frustration. It's good to have this insight from both of you. Thanks so much for joining us. We are going to unpack a lot of this. You've given us some food for thought here as we move on with Ruby Bailey and Ernest Perry. Let me just ask each of you really quickly before we say goodbye. And first of all, this show goes really quickly. We'll just have to have you come back so that we can unpack a lot of just sort of what is next. What do you see as solutions? But let me just ask each of you, what are you working on next? What are you working on right now that we can just watch for, and we'll continue the discussion? Pat, you want to go first?
Well, sure. You know, in the context of the protest over Mr. George Floyd's murder, I want to do several local pieces on that. First of all, I want to look at the contract between the city and the Columbia Police Officer Association. I want to look at our own policy regarding chokeholds, use of force, and I also want to look at some other language and policies that could allow sort of a vague sort of any response of use of force by the hands of Columbia Police. So that's kind of what I'm focused on right now. And, you know, I have to cover the matters of the court every day. Right now I'm engaged in an appeal court case that I heard oral arguments in this morning. So I should have those two pieces coming out soon, and I think they're going to be great, and I hope everyone will take the time to read those.
Thanks. Thanks, Pat. We appreciate that. Please take care, and thanks for your reporting. We'll watch for it.
You bet. Thank you, Janet. Thank you, everybody. Have a good day.
Thanks, Pat. And Glenn, what are you working on right now that we'll watch for?
There are several stories we're working on pursuant to the protest. Some of the issues that have been brought out by local protesters, more accountability, private review, citizens review boards, defunding of police departments, what that looks like, who's in support of it. And as you know, defunding is just not dismantling the police department, but maybe diverting some of those funds directed towards public safety into other areas such as social services, mental health, and other things that help promote public safety. So those are some things we're working on, and some other long-range plans too that I really can't discuss right now. But so that's where we are. So,
all right. Thank you so much, Glenn. Again, you too. Stay safe, and we'll watch for your reporting. Thanks so much for coming on the check-in.
Thank you so much for having me, Janet.
Thanks, Glenn. Take care. Let me just remind us, this is the check-in, and we're talking about coverage of protests, police, how journalists, especially all of us, are navigating social media and journalism during this national reckoning that we're having right now with racism in the U.S. coming on the heels of a pandemic. We're joined by MU School of Journalism Associate Dean Ernest Perry and Columbia, Missourian Executive Editor Ruby Bailey. They're helping us unpack all of these topics. So Professors Perry and Professor Ruby Bailey, I've just got to ask with start with a really impossible word, objectivity. With this moment that we're in, do you feel like objectivity is dying a death, finally, for journalists who have been talking for some time about how it's kind of impossible? We're all in our skin. We all have a vantage point. We all bring all kinds of things, including our identity, into our reporting. So let's not try to be objective. Let's try instead to be fair, and let's report the facts. Ruby, let's start with you. What is objectivity for you, and does it hold us back?
Well, thank you for the question, and thank you for having me today. I think in terms of the word, it has, you know, it's taken on a connotation that I don't think sometimes we've ever really practiced, but objectivity is not, I guess my question would be, to whose objective view are you referring? Because there's a standard then, right? So it's presupposing some standard. So no, I don't think that objectivity is. So I think objectivity is something that we've been watching kind of be replaced with balance and with examining our own implicit bias and with providing a context and a framework for the facts that we provide our readers so that they will understand that this one instance did not happen in a vacuum, whatever that incident or that instance is. This happened in a culture or in a situation that has been ongoing, or that has, you know, this didn't happen just because of one thing. This was a buildup, or this is the history of the way this particular organization or group has always operated. So long story short, I think objectivity, I haven't heard the word used in newsrooms as much in about the past 15 years. I've heard balance, I've heard fairness, I've heard context, but I've not really heard the word used that often.
Yeah, I agree. Ernest Perry, what are your thoughts on objectivity right now?
Well, my thoughts on objectivity right now are pretty much similar to Ruby's. It's something that is, it's a word that's used, to be honest, it's a word that's sort of used when journalists are accused of showing a bias one way or the other. They will throw the word of objectivity out there as a cover for that. And so, but in reality, it's a myth. Journalists, as any human being, walk into a situation with biases, preconceived notions that come from their lived experience. And what a journalist, what we at least teach our journalists at the School of Journalism to do, and we would always hope that they would do, is to recognize their biases and their preconceived notions and sort of work against those to tell the story of the people that they're talking to. That's the whole point of it, is that recognizing that the story is not about you, it's about the people and the events that you're covering. And if you can tell those stories from their experiences and their words and their images, then you're presenting a authentic picture of what's going on to a much larger audience.
Right. You have both mentioned the word sort of implicit bias. On social media, Black journalists have taken to social media with accounts of having their objectivity questioned. What's going on with this? What advice would you have for Black journalists who are doing that, and also for all newsrooms and editors? What can our newsroom cultures do to be better and not question our Black journalists about things like objectivity?
Well, I think what newsrooms can do, and I know that Ruby does this in the Columbia, Missouri newsroom, is to recognize that the reporters and editors in those newsrooms come from different backgrounds and different experiences, and respect where they're coming from and what they've seen. they can bring some expertise to a particular story based on their experiences and where they come from. But then also making sure that there is a check there to say, hey, are you making sure that your experience is informing the story and not necessarily bending the story in a direction that is not authentic, that is not really telling what is actually happening there. So, I mean, there is a fine line there, but I do think that you're capable of walking that fine line and bringing that balance, as Ruby was talking about, that balance into the types of stories that are being told.
All right, Ruby, do you have any comments on that?
Wow, what Ernest said.
Yeah.
No, really, it's in all seriousness, I think Ernest hit the nail right on the head. I would simply ask that our student journalists and that our reporters, when they go out, our photographers, when they're taking images, that we really question ourselves first about mm-hmm. what it is we're doing, why we're doing it, understanding our own reactions and responses and questioning those and digging deeper than those. When we're faced with a situation that we either vehemently disagree with or wholeheartedly support, especially during those times.
Well, you both mentioned implicit bias. I think that's what is really important that you're both advising, and that really I tend to see journalists doing is questioning our own bias. And of course, we're working, a lot of us, in newsrooms and in a culture where it's a framework of whiteness. I think someone on our NPR program 1A said this yesterday. You're coming into, you're operating from a framework of whiteness. So always question mm-hmm. that. So I've asked you about your advice for Black journalists that are taking to social media with accounts of having their objectivity questioned. What would you say to journalists at large more about how we question ourselves and how we do better, basically? I have to give you one more thing that somebody on 1A said yesterday, you know, white journalists, we see you here now. Get here faster. So that was another thing that I wanted to ask you about. Mm. How can journalists do a better job of actually calling things out, like racism, dishonesty from public officials, and injustice? I think sometimes our caution holds us back. Do you think we need to do a better mm-hmm. job of calling things out? Ruby?
I do. I do. And mm-hmm. I think that some of that can start at the top with leadership. I strongly believe that we will sometimes follow the direction of an editor or the top editor who can help set the pace and the tone, who can help us think about ways to smartly, creatively, and honestly confront what we are seeing, especially if it's something that we've never seen before. And we don't want to say that someone, is not telling the truth. But if they're not telling the truth, they're not telling the truth. And if we can show that and prove that, then we should be able to say, well, they're not. This is not factual. Here's why it's not. Or this is not the entire situation. These numbers don't show you. They only tell you one fact, but they don't show you the totality of the situation at hand. So I think that should come from us at the top in leadership first and foremost to help to create that environment of curiosity, of questioning authority, of questioning, you know, the numbers that seem like they make perfect sense, of digging deeper, going further, reaching out to diverse sources from different socioeconomic backgrounds, gender, race, class, ethnicity, sexual orientation or preference. All of those things count. Who are our sources? Who are we talking to? Who are we looking at? So I think that it should bubble up as well from reporters, but certainly those of us who are supposed to be in charge have, I think, an ultimate responsibility to making sure that we are pushing for that, we are supporting that, we are encouraging that, and that we're making sure that at the end of the day that that's what happens.
All right. Ernest Perry, anything to add?
Well, one of the things that I would say is that I think reporters need to question more. I think Ruby made some very good points there. Quite often, people who make statements, we allow them, and I'll say we, I'm talking about journalists, will allow them to make a statement and then don't push back on it. It's like, just ask one simple question. What did you mean by that? When someone makes a question, we will assume that we know what they meant, and we run with that without asking that one additional question, which is, what did you mean by that? Why did you say that? What backs, you know, what information do you have to back up the statement that you just made? And in many times, asking that one additional question can give the audience a much clearer picture as to where that particular person stands on something, as opposed to having to assume because the reporter didn't ask that additional question.
All right. They always be curious and ask that follow-up question. You're listening to The Check-In, and we're speaking with MU School of Journalism Associate Dean Ernest Perry and Columbia Missourian Executive Editor and Professor Ruby Bailey about reporting protests during a pandemic, also the movements for racial justice, how we report these. Ruby and Ernest, I tend to start with an impossible general question, but we kind of dug right in today, so let me end with kind of an impossible general question, which is maybe not so impossible, but just a very general, your vantage point. What have you been watching? What have you been noticing as this unfolds? A lot of people say we're seeing some of the same things, but at the same time, a lot of things are different. What's the same? What's different? Ernest Perry, you were here for the 2015 Concerned Student 1950 protests. What are you seeing this time that strikes you?
I would say some of the, at least initially, the coverage. I was a reporter back during the Rodney King uprisings mm-hmm. in Los Angeles, and mm-hmm. I covered those. And many of the images of that time and the early images of the George Floyd incident and others are eerily similar to what I saw then. But as the story has unfolded, you see much more depth, much more authenticity. You see a different kind of coverage here, and I think that has been brought about because there's so many other outlets in which to present that coverage. Back then, the mainstream media pretty much owned the story because they were the only ones that existed. But now you have social media and the ability of people to present and disseminate information in real time that has sort of forced the mainstream to sort of move into a direction of presenting these stories in their authenticity because there is not that filter there.
All right. Thank you. And Ruby Bailey, any last thoughts on what you're seeing and noticing this time around?
Sure. I think that I am noticing some improvement, as Ernest mentioned, in some instances in terms of generalities, in terms of coverage. I don't see the headline like they had in Katrina where the African-American folks who were looking for food were looting and the white folks who were looking for food were captioned as surviving or, you know, survivors of Katrina. I don't see those things. However, I would say that there are times when I can tell that there are instances of change. There's a greater emphasis on, you know, being a bit more careful about things, but the system that was in place is still the system that's in place. The workflows that were in place are still the workflows that are in place, and that's where sometimes we will have our problems.
All right, and we want to keep, as journalists, keep pointing to those systems and giving that context. Thank you so much, Professor Ruby Bailey and Professor Ernest Perry, for joining us on The Check-In. It's been brilliant, and we just have to keep going with this conversation.
Thank you.
All right, that's it for today's live check-in from KBIA. Thanks again to Professor Ruby Bailey and to Dr. Ernest Perry for joining us. Also, Pat Pratt and Glenn Rice for joining us today. Thank you also for checking in. We'll be back here tomorrow, same time, same place. We're talking with Dr. Christelle Ilbudo, MU Health's infectious disease expert. We're talking about immunity, health, and the way forward. Until then, I'm Janet Saidi. Stay well and stay in touch.